This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we are, Wednesday, March 26th. Could be a little bit warmer than it has been today. I had a glimpse of summer yesterday, I think, today as well. Highs of 81 today, 80 tomorrow. Chance for showers on Friday and Saturday. Don't let it keep you away from Wednesday at the square, though. It's going to be nice this afternoon. Saturday, 90% chance for showers, which is bad considering that's the makeup day for the Irish Channel St. Patrick's Day Parade. And then 83 for a high on Sunday with more clouds. And looking ahead to next week, we're looking at the lower 80s. So spring is here and it's starting to feel like it. We're going to talk with our friend Jamie Rowan, Associate Professor of Legal Studies at UMass Amherst and Director of the Center for Justice, Law, and Societies, about what's been going on with immigration and President Trump and executive orders. Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time. Before we get to immigration, I just wanted to address this generally. I get emails daily from the Office of Communications from the White House with executive orders that the president has signed, and I can't even begin to count how many I have. And that just gets me to wondering about what's contained in these executive orders, because a lot of it, if you read them, is legalese, and a lot of them have consequences and both intended and unintended. Is somebody keeping an eye on all of this or not? And I'm not saying that the president's doing anything wrong for the people that are big fans of President Trump. I'm just saying that there's a lot of stuff that's going on here, right?
There is. I do think it's important to note that President Trump isn't issuing really any more executive orders than a lot of other recent presidents, and certainly not any more than presidents during wartime. Okay. Executive orders typically come out when there is what we call exigencies, things like this isn't a normal time and we can't go through the legislative process, and we want the executive to be able to be nimble and quick and fast acting. And Donald Trump entered his second term really wanting to be nimble and quick and fast acting. The issue with executive orders is that there is a limit to what the executive branch is allowed to do. We have three branches of government, and the legislative branch, Congress, is supposed to do a lot of the lawmaking in this country. And so when an executive order does something that Congress is supposed to do, it's generally considered not valid. So, for example, creating or dismantling a government agency, that power is supposed to come from Congress. And so executive orders that do something like that usually don't stand up if they get challenged in court. Other executive orders are within the power of the executive branch, and the executive has powers to do that as long as they don't violate other provisions of the Constitution, such as unfairly discriminate against people based on their protected statuses like race, or other things that are pretty clearly not within the Constitution, like taking away somebody's rights to due process, that kind of stuff that is expressly in the Constitution and in our amendments that are designed to protect us from government power. The executive can issue an order, but if it gets challenged, it probably won't stand up in court.
So I guess if anything, what I'm hearing is that President Trump's being more forthright about it than other presidents, and I'm not trying to be judgmental, just observational, because we are getting the emails of it, and he is making a big deal out of the executive orders that he's signing, where he's not really doing anything that other presidents haven't done. He's just letting people perhaps know more about it. Would that be accurate, Jamie?
I don't think that's necessarily what's happening. One way to look at this is that most presidents, when they come into office, especially when they have both branches of Congress in the same party, try to make legal changes with legislation. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do that is that when you pass a law through Congress, it's not likely to change with the next presidential administration. Mm-hmm. If you pass a law in Congress, it's going to stick for a long time until you can get Congress to undo it. which is hard, right? Just like getting Congress to make a law is hard. What's different about what Donald Trump is doing is that he's not trying to make Congress make laws. That is different than what other presidents have done regarding executive orders. Typically, presidents have tried to create law with Congress as a partner, and if that doesn't work, then they issue an executive order. That's, for example, what Barack Obama did when it came to DACA for immigration benefits for youth that were brought here illegally. But Trump isn't even trying to start with legislation. He's immediately jumping to executive orders. That is different.
He's taking advantage, would it be accurate to say, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but he's just taking advantage of a vacuum that created because Congress sometimes, they don't want to get involved in this, maybe because they're worried about re-election?
Well, the problem is there's actually a very small majority for Donald Trump in Congress. He has a very few votes to lose, and many of these policies that he's trying to implement through executive orders are actually not as popular. And so it would be difficult for Congress to actually pass them. It might be hard for him to get all the votes he needs. He doesn't want to wait. He doesn't want to have it debated. He wants to make it happen right now. And so that's what's happening. Whether it's taking advantage or not, it's really more just not wanting to wait to create more durable legislation with Congress and to make it possibly lose.
Instead of saying take advantage, maybe I should have said seizing the opportunity. Let me phrase it this way, Jamie. I don't know if you're a football fan or not, but, you know, it's like the old thing of I'm going to run a ball till you stop me. And it seems as though, okay, this avenue exists, so I'm gonna use it until somebody challenges me. And until then.
I think that's exactly right.
Okay. Let me take a break. We'll talk about the Alien Enemies Act deportation and what's going on with that. Our guest, Jamie Rowan, Associate Professor of Legal Studies at UMass Amherst, Director of the Center for Justice, Law, and Society. 620 Traffic Now, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jamie Rowan, Associate Professor of Legal Studies at UMass Amherst, Director of the Center for Justice, Law, and Societies. Jamie, let's talk about the Alien Enemies Act, the deportation of alleged Venezuelan gang members to El Salvador with no due process, and what's going on there?
So what's happening right now is that we have an act that Congress passed in 1789. It's been used three times during war times, most notably during World War I and World War II, to hold people that were citizens of countries that we were at war with. And the act enables the federal government to detain and deport people without the due process they would typically be granted under the Constitution. It's only been used during war. And what Trump is saying is that the presence of members of a gang, alleged members of a gang, is akin to being at war, right, with a country. Mm-hmm. And that, therefore, people that the executive branch has deemed members of the gang should be able to be detained and deported without the typical due process that they would be guaranteed. The issue with this, and the reason it's getting a lot of attention, is that, first of all, there is no war. There is no declared war. And so there's a really big question about whether we can give the executive branch of government the authority to declare that this particular group is akin to a belligerent, right? Mm-hmm. The way we might think about Germans during World War I and World War II. And remember, this was used in a very famous case to detain Japanese citizens in the United States, people of Japanese heritage in World War II. And so it has a pretty storied history of being used basically for racial discrimination.
When you say detained, you're talking about internment of the Japanese, right?
Internment of the Japanese. And that was done under this law. And so this law has a complicated and its history in the U.S. So the first problem is, are we at war? No. Is this group of people akin to a belligerent nation? No. But the other big issue is that there has been absolutely no process to determine whether the individuals that were deported were part of the gang. Even in World War II, this is what a judge said yesterday, Nazis were given more due process to determine whether they were Nazis. And so in any decision by the executive branch to label a particular group of people, either, for example, terrorists during the war on terror, or in this case, members of a gang or a belligerent group, there's a question about minimal due process to make that determination. And the executive branch, Trump administration, has decided they don't want to tell the courts whether they followed any process to make that determination.
Jamie, real quick, before we run out of time, I just got to get this in. And that is for people that say, well, I'm not Venezuelan, or I'm not a member of the gang, or I am a citizen, I'm not a non-citizen. Why should they be concerned about this?
That's a really good question. So the federal government, the Constitution was basically created with the promise that the federal government was not going to be able to pick people up off the streets and make them go away, that there was always going to be minimal due process. It is throughout our Constitution. And so doing this for one group of people is a slippery slope, and the concern is that that could be done for other people that the government disagrees with.
When somebody says that they're in the country illegally, are they necessarily in the country illegally, or are they non-citizens that are being deported here?
There are multiple categories of people who are here without status of citizen. And many people are here on legal visas, but they don't have the status of a citizen. And so a person who is here seeking asylum is not here illegally. They're here awaiting a status that would allow them to work or to participate in politics, but it doesn't mean they're here illegally, especially if they're from a country such as a Venezuelan or previously a Haitian. They have what's called temporary protected status, or they did. They were allowed to be here because going back to their country would be so dangerous. And so the United States, throughout its history, has welcomed immigrants from countries that were dangerous, and it gave people the legal right to be here.
So to wrap it up, the concern is erosion of due process?
Absolutely, is that we need to, for anyone, citizen, non-citizen, they should be able to be determined who they are. And so the claim that a person is a gang member without any process for that determination is a scary prospect under our Constitution, which again was written so that the federal government, so that no government would be able to take an individual and be able to make them disappear.
Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Jamie Rowan, Associate Professor of Legal Studies, UMass Amherst, Director of the Center for Justice, Law, and Societies. We'll talk about a horrific dog attack when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we'll go to Dave Cohen. 6:46, 14 till 7 here on WWL, Wednesday morning, March 26th. Got a great concert in the square, in Lafayette Square this afternoon for you, absolutely free. Starts at 5. I'll give you details on that. Last Thursday, can you imagine your 81-year-old mother or any 81-year-old woman putting out the garbage and being viciously attacked when three pit bulls broke through a fenced yard and mauled her to death, sustained multiple dog bites to her body, transported to the hospital where she later died of the result, and the dog's owner witnessed at least one of the dogs biting the victim. All three animals were impounded. One of them, as I understand it, was put down. Alyssa Curtis, a talented young reporter at WWL-TV, did a story on this, and I saw last night she had Casey Singleton, the owner of Canis Integrated Behavior Solutions, on, and I thought it'd be interesting to talk to him. Good morning, Casey. How are you doing?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you doing?
I'm okay, sir. Thanks for taking the time with us. I really do appreciate it. First off, there's a little bit of confusion. It is Casey or Casey?
Casey. Like Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Gotcha. That's what I figured. Let's talk about, you are an animal trainer, sir. Is that what you do? You train dogs?
Yes, I'm behaviorist and animal and dog trainer.
I don't know what that means, behaviorist. I'm not arguing. I'm just trying to figure it out, what you do.
Basically, understand the psychology of canines.
Okay. So let's talk about, first of all, because, you know, it can be a lightning rod when you talk about pit bulls. I know, having had this job for decades now, whenever something like this happens, it seems like it's always pit bulls. If you look up the number of dog bites, people can argue statistically this, that, the other thing. Do you own pit bulls? What would you advise people that own pit bulls of?
Okay, basically, you want to get your dog trained. You want to understand the psychology of each breed that you own. It doesn't matter if it's a pit bull or a chihuahua. All dogs can bite. They all have tendencies. Some have more propensity to bite than others. Understand the breed. That's the most important part. Research your breed. Dogs go by a social hierarchy. Pit bulls are just stronger. They're probably statistically more in neighborhoods than a lot of other breeds just because of popularity. So that's why you're going to see more bites, because they're more popular. There's Labradors and other dogs bite as well, but you may not have as many in your neighborhood. There's a lot of pit bulls, so they're stronger, they're muscular, they have more jaw pressure. If not that, they're more aggressive than the other dogs. It's just that people need to understand that you have to take control of your dog. You understand the psychology. Contain your dog. Make sure your environment is safe and enclosed properly. Make sure you have structure in the household with your dog. Make sure your dog understands that he or she has to be under a certain hierarchy. We all have been raising some type of hierarchy in our household. We have the dad, the mother, and the children. They have their place in the pack, basically. Animals have a social hierarchy, as do most animals and humans. The problem is we as pet owners hardly ever explore the psychology and effects of social hierarchy. When domestic dogs are being bred over and over for dog shows or irresponsible backyard breeding, they lose the ability to communicate or exhibit the traits they were originally bred for. So therefore, they lose the ability to understand pack communication. They lose it if they are taken away from the litter too early. They don't get the proper socialization from the litter mates or the mother or the communication. And then we have the problem. So, and the owners don't always understand that. So I use dogs to help other dogs to communicate and understand social hierarchy. It's hard to find the domestic dog that has perfect communication. So we train them to have better communication skills, but we use good dogs that understand that. The main reason why we're having so many issues with our dogs because we as humans are not helping enough with our dogs' communication. I teach people how to communicate with their dogs. There's a certain language. There's human language and there's dog language. I teach people how to understand dog language and I teach dogs how to understand human language. So we have to integrate the languages.
Casey, let me take a break. Let me take a break, please. And I know we were supposed to talk to Anna Zarella. I'm going to push Anna because I want to keep this conversation going with you because I think it's very important. And I think what you said is very logical. In that pit bulls are they're the Mike Tysons of dogs, right? So you gotta make sure that, and I shouldn't have brought a human being into this, but you gotta understand what you're dealing with here. It's not the Pee Wee Herman of dogs. If Pee Wee Herman can get in a fight with you as well, he's dead. I shouldn't have said that, but as well as Mike Tyson, but the results are gonna be a lot more severe. Let me pick it up here. We come back, and also what you told Alyssa last night about things you can do should a strange dog approach you and ways to protect yourself. It's a very valuable conversation we're having with Casey Singleton, a behaviorist, owner of Canis Integrated Behavior Solutions. I love the way he said that he teaches humans to talk with dogs or communicate, and dogs to communicate with humans. A lot of times we think dogs are human beings, and they are not. 6:52, 8 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:57, 3 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Casey Singleton, owner of Canis Integrated Behavior Solutions, about the dog attack that happened last Thursday. Three pit bulls got out and attacked an 81-year-old woman as she was putting her garbage out. Casey, you talked about people taking control of the animals. A lot of times, you know, I saw a guy walking a cane Corso at Petco some time ago, and you could tell he was not in control of this dog, and it frightened me for not only everybody in the store at the time, but for him as well when he got home. You don't have to be mean to the dog. You don't want to abuse the dog, but you do have to make sure that they understand that you're the alpha. Is that accurate?
Yes. If you understand alpha, David Meech was the guy that studied wolves, and he coined the term alpha. He redacted that because it didn't really apply to the wolves or domestic dogs. Mm-hmm. So basically, you have to be the dominant person or the person in charge as far as being more assertive, but assertiveness or dominance doesn't mean physical, okay? When your father walked in the house, you stopped because he had a certain energy. You have to be that person that delivers that energy and let that dog know you are in charge. This is what you're supposed to do. It's kind of difficult for some people because they don't understand that dogs aren't human, and they talk to them like they're human. Mm-hmm. They're not. You have to talk to them in a dog language, and there's techniques to do that, and a lot of it's non-physical.
Let me ask you before we run out of time. What do you do if you should be approached by a strange dog, or you sense that a dog is going to attack you? What's the best way to protect yourself?
Well, basically, your arms. You have vital organs all over your stomach region, midsection, your neck, your face. You don't want to mess up your face. So cover your face up with your arms or your chest, your midsection. You really don't know where that dog is coming from or how he's going to attack you, but if you can put your arms up and block him, it's better to take an arm bite than a femoral artery or a neck bite and get the artery there. So, and turn away as quickly as possible, because if you're looking at a dog, it's a threat. If he perceives it as a threat, turn around, don't run, walk away slowly, move slowly. If he bites you, just kind of block him, let him bite. If that's what you have to do. I mean, it's difficult. It's not an easy task. And if you're an older person or a kid, it's very difficult.
Thank you, KC. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you. Anna Zarilla, SPCA, when we come back.